any day now. I will hear you say
goodbye. Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Rock Review. The content of this program is intended for a print and visually impaired audience. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about rock and roll music from such sources as the News and Observer, The Week magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, any day now, when your restless eyes...
This opening number, Any Day Now, is brought to us by Ronnie Millsap. We'll be hearing more about and from Ronnie Millsap later on in today's program. But first, these trivia questions.
Any day now, love will let me die.
Our trivia questions come to us today from www.squidoo.com. Question number one. Who is the only person to be inducted two times into the Country Music Hall of Fame? Multiple choice question. Was it A, Ronnie Millsap, B, Roy Rogers, C, Hank Williams, or D, Johnny Cash? Hint, this country singer was actually born in the city, Cincinnati, and his real name was Leonard Sly. Question number two, which of the following singers started out as a professional baseball pitcher? Was it A, Ronnie Millsap, B, Randy Travis, C, Charlie Pride, D, Merle Haggard, or E, Dolly Parton? Hint, the signature song of this artist is Kiss an Angel Good Morning, and he was named CMA's Entertainer of the Year back in 1971. The answers to these two important trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. The transition section for today is brought to us by, once again, BGORecords.com from their series Today in Rock History. And today is the weekend of May the 13th. What were the number one hits this weekend back in history? Well, back in 1965, it was Roger Miller with King of the Road. And back in 1967, the number one hit this weekend was The Supremes, The Happening. Back in 1977 this weekend, the number one hit was Leo Sayer, When I Need You. And back in 1989, it was Bon Jovi, I'll Be There for You, at number one this weekend. If you were born on May the 13th, you share a B-Day with Ritchie Valens' La Bamba, back in 1941 on May 13th. Mary Wells, My Guy, back on May 13th, 1943. Christine Thompson, 1946. Stevie Wonder, 1950. And Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish, 1966 on May 13th. Or if you were born on May 14th, you share a birthday with Bobby Darin, Dream Lover, born on May 14th, 1936. David Byrne of Talking Heads, May 14th, 1952. And 1969, it was Danny Wood being born on May the 14th, New Kids on the Block. Deaths on May the 14th include Frank Sinatra. He died on May 14th, 1998. Miscellany in rock history this weekend. Well, back in 1968 this weekend, it was the Beatles shocking Britain when they refused an invitation to play for the Queen in London. And back in 1977 this weekend, Dolly Parton makes her first New York concert appearance at Bottom Line. Back in 1985 this weekend, Bruce and Julianne Springsteen get married. Back in 1988, Yes, Foreigner, The Coasters, Wilson Pickett, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Genesis, Rascals, The Bee Gees, Led Zeppelin, and others appear at a star-studded gala at New York's Madison Square Garden as Atlantic Records celebrates its 40th anniversary. Once again, that was back on 1988 on May the 14th. This next Transitions article, brought to us by the Associated Press, John Rogers, published on May the 9th, 2011, entitled, Musician John Walker, 67, Dies of Liver Cancer. John Walker, the American-born musician who was the frontman for the Walker Brothers, one of the most successful bands of Britain's golden age of rock and roll, has died at age 67. Walker died Saturday of liver cancer, his personal assistant Polly Klemmer said. The Associated Press, he had continued to work until just a few weeks ago, making his last concert appearance in Los Angeles in March, Klemmer said Sunday. He had his greatest success as the guitarist and vocalist for the Walker Brothers, which produced such 1960s hits as The Sun Ain't Gonna Shine Anymore, Love Her, Make It Easy on Yourself, and My Ship Is Coming In. While the Beatles and other British groups were remaking the faces of rock and roll during the so-called British invasion of America in the mid-1960s, Walker moved from the United States to England instead. There, he and two other Americans, bassist Scott Engel and drummer Gary Leeds, called themselves the Walker Brothers, and each adopted Walker as his surname, although they were not related. They had instant success with their first British recording, 1964's Love Her, and a string of his quirkies quickly followed. Article skips down. As part of the Walker Brothers, he toured the world and sold more than 23 million records, according to his website. Article skips down. Walker, who took up the guitar at age 14, began performing professionally in the late 1950s. By the early 1960s, he was a regular at such popular Hollywood clubs as Pandora's Box on the Sunset Strip and on the college circuit. During those years, he worked with such musicians as Ritchie Valens and Glen Campbell, with producer Phil Spector and songwriters Tommy Boyce and Bobby Hart, who wrote for the Monkees and other groups. John Walker, dead at 67. In local rock news, we see this article by Brian Reed, published in the Independent on 2/23/11, entitled Into the Groove. 5 years in, Bull City Records keep spinning. Shopping at Bull City Records requires some degree of intention. Though the store sits just off 9th Street in Durham, it's perched on the second floor of 1916 Perry Street, above Avid Video and CCI Photographics, and next to Cosmic Cantina. The store in the Perry Street loft, since it opened on November 12, 2005, is marked only by the word Records, printed on the overhang of a small black awning and painted on the two separate halves of a sandwich board, which framed the narrow doorway leading up the flight of old wooden stairs to the record shop. The only reason people walk through the door, says Chaz Martenstein, Bull City's 30-year-old proprietor, is because they love music. But the level of commitment shopping at Bull City Records demands isn't without benefits. Conversations start pretty easy, Martenstein says. Sometimes I wonder if I'm too talkative, but a lot of my customer base has become friends, regulars, people that I know their tastes when they walk in the door. Between customer service and an ample supply of nearby music fans, Bull City Records has managed to stay afloat for 5 years. On January 31, Martenstein mailed the final payment on the small business loan he took to open the shop. On Saturday, Martenstein celebrates the occasion by hosting a party at Full Steam Brewery. Article skips down. Being a regular at a record store is similar to being a regular at a bar in a lot of ways, says Kyle Miller, co-owner of Durham's Church Key Records, which released last year's Men's debut LP, Sunny Down Snuff. You see and meet other regulars there, and half of the experience is talking to the guy behind the bar or counter. Chaz and I talk a lot. He even has to throw me out when it's time to close sometimes. In a small independent shop with limited inventory, the customer service isn't just a perk, it's a prerequisite. Chances are, a lot of times, I'm not going to have exactly what you want in stock if you came in looking for something specific, Martenstein admits. But I also know I'm going to have a lot of stuff similar to it, or something new I can turn people on to. The last stand for us record stores is going to be our customer service. Another regular Bull City customer, Nathan McKinney, 33, says, "If Martenstein were hawking goat gland transplants, I would buy two. He's made me financially poor, but musically richer, and my vitality is through the roof." But even with such loyal customers, it's something of a wonder that Bull City Records, or for that matter, any of the Triangle's five independent record stores, have managed to keep the lights on. They compete for slim margins with used bookstore shelves of inexpensive second-hand LPs and CDs. They compete with big-box giants selling CDs to consumers at prices well below an indie shop's wholesale price. They compete with the Internet, all for only a couple dollars profit per album sold. Record stores also face dwindling sales averages industry-wide. In January, the record for the lowest-selling number one album was broken when Cakes, Showroom of Compassion, scraped the ceiling with a paltry 44,000 units sold in the first week. Article skips down and ends with this. Martenstein regularly repays the commitment it takes to find and shop at Bull City Records. In return, it's paid off through the response he and the store receive from the local community. If we had a Chaz in every single town in the United States, we'd have a really great country, says Carr. You don't really need to look at Pitchfork or whatever to see what new music is. You just go in and say, "Hey, Chaz, what's good this week?" This next article comes to us from the Chicago Tribune, published on 4/5/2011, entitled, "The Name of This Band Is What?" written by Mark Caro. Snowflakes fluttered down, lightning flashed, and inspiration for a brilliant new band name struck. Thundersnow. Mind you, I don't actually have a band, but in my rock geek fantasy life, I'm constantly in search of the perfect band name. So I vetted this one in the commonly accepted 21st century method. I Googled it. Sure enough, not only is there a Madison, Wisconsin rock band named Thunder Snow on MySpace, but also a Rochester, New York metal band named Thunder Snow. Sigh. This seems to be the case with just about any clever band name you might come up with. Article skips down. While thinking about the space shuttle launch, I decided I should call my theoretical band the Astronauties. I subsequently found the webpage for the four-piece Scottish band, Astronauty. The other day I passed some gnarly roadkill and wondered whether there was a band called Flattened Rabbit. Guess what? Flat Rabbit was a 90s Denver thrash metal band that apparently has split up, and West Virginia singer-songwriter Todd Coyle calls his company Flat Rabbit Music. Okay, but what about Crushed Bunny? Well, there's a Phoenix rock band called Crushed, plus other acts named Bunny Band, Gin Bunny, No Bunny, Sky Bunny, Boo Boo Bunny, Nathan Maxwell and the original Bunny Gang, and the Steve Bunny Band. But apparently, no Crushed Bunny. And so we see the thought process that would lead someone to a band name as stupid as Crushed Bunny. Pay dirt. No wonder the Billboard Rock Songs chart is populated by such acts as Cage the Elephant, Shine Down, Foster the People, Avenged Sevenfold, Young the Giant, Stone Sour, and Alter Bridge. Unfathomable band names are nothing new. Poco Harum, anyone? But in the olden days, they felt more like a matter of choice than necessity. There were still plenty of things living. Animals, beetles, birds, crickets, eagles, flamingos, monkeys. Non-living. Doors, kinks, platters, rolling stones, seeds, temptations, four seasons, four tops. And in between. Zombies, from which to choose. A friend recently popped by my cubicle, and I bet her that any three nouns she gave me would turn out to be band names. She said hippos, snow globe, and zucchini, and guess what? The hippos, snow globe, and zucchini are all on MySpace. Article skips down. The other key factor, the world used to be smaller. Now, about 14 million musical acts are registered on MySpace, according to a representative. Everyone is everywhere, and all it takes is a mouse click to learn that the idea you thought was original is just more recycling. Google is a dream crusher, the article skips down. You almost need to get a random word generator, which you can do on the Internet, or get out a legal pad and start throwing out words and start coupling them together. Article skips down and ends with this. The search for the perfect band name may be a fool's errand anyway, so why not pick something goofy like Death Cab for Cutie, lifted from a Bonzo Dog Doodah Band song played in the Beatles' Magical Mystery Tour film, or Dumbfounding, like Kings of Leon, in tribute to the bandmate's father and grandfather, both named Leon, though how kings factor in is beyond me. Still, with so many words out there, there must be a name lurking on the edges of our imaginations as descriptive and punchy as, say, The Clash. Well, I think I've got one. It's... heck no, I'm not telling. At least not until I've set up a MySpace page and formed a band. So what do you know about today's featured artist, Ronnie Millsap? Well, this bio is brought to us by A&E Television Networks, published in 2011 and published on www.biography.com. Country singer, born January 16, 1944, in the Appalachian town of Robbinsville, North Carolina. Blind since birth, Millsap spent his early childhood in an impoverished farming community. With financial support from his grandparents, he attended the Moorhead State School for the Blind in Raleigh, where he was schooled in classical music and learned to play the piano, violin, and guitar. Millsap continued his education at Young Harris Junior College in Atlanta, where he studied political science. After his graduation, he was offered a scholarship to Emory University, but instead chose to pursue a professional career in music. In 1964, at the age of 20, Millsap released his first single, Total Disaster. The following year, he relocated to Memphis, where he fronted his own rhythm and blues band. In 1970, they recorded the pop single, Loving You is a Natural Thing. The following year, Millsap released his eponymous debut album for the Warner Brothers record label. In 1972, Millsap moved to the country music epicenter of Nashville, Tennessee. In 1973, he signed with RCA Victor. A slew of hit singles, including I Hate You, 1973, Pure Love, and Please Don't Tell Me How the Story Ends, both in 1974. For the latter single, Millsap was awarded a Grammy for Best Male Country Vocal Performance. Furthermore, the Country Music Association named Millsap Male Vocalist of the Year in 1974, 1976, and 1977.
We'll let the magic take us away, back to the feelings we shared when they played in the still of the night.
In 1981, Millsap recorded the heart-wrenching ballad Smoky Mountain Rain, which introduced him to a larger audience when it crossed over to the pop charts. He secured the same success with the songs There's No Getting Over Me back in 1981 and Any Day Now, 1982, which opened today's program, by the way. In 1986, Millsap won another Best Male Country Vocal Performance Grammy for the album Lost in the 50s Tonight, 1986, that you hear in the background right now. The following year, he shared a Best Country Vocal Performance duet Grammy with Kenny Rogers for their collaboration on the single Make No Mistake, She's Mine. In 1990, Millsap published an autobiography, Almost Like a Song, which chronicled his ascent from poverty-stricken beginnings to country music superstar. He collaborated with Country Rock Veterans Alabama to record the 1997 holiday album, Christmas in Dixie. Most recently, Millsap released the album, Then Sings My Soul, 2009. To date, Millsap boasts 40 number one country hits, 6 Grammy Awards, and 8 Country Music Association Awards.
In the still of the night, our paths may never cross again.
This next article comes to us from Sarah Bayer Kelly, published in www.npr.org back on the 14th of August, 2009. Ray Charles told Ronnie Millsap to follow his heart. One story you might not have heard about Ronnie Millsap is when he met Ray Charles. The elder singer encouraged him to make music, to follow his heart. Today we hear an interview conducted by guest, host, David Green with musician Ronnie Millsap that aired recently on Weekend Edition. Over the course of the almost hour-long conversation, Ronnie Millsap revealed much of himself. He was born blind and shunned by his mother, who believed his blindness was punishment from God. He was raised by his grandparents, learned Braille at the age of 6, and lost the last remnant of his sight after a blow from a teacher at school. Amazing stuff, all of it. Here's an excerpt from that interview.
For the world.
What happened in my life was a wonderful thing that eventually changed my life. I became involved in a residential school for the blind in Raleigh, the Governor Moorhead School for the Blind in Raleigh. And there were some pretty barbaric disciplinary actions. Oh, yeah, they love to. Now, academically, I will say, it's the finest education you could ever get. They discovered my aptitude for music, so I was up playing violin at 7 and translating that information to play guitar, piano at 8. I've got to give so much credit for everything I do, because they taught us Braille. I was 6. You can't make it as a blind person without Braille.
She knows where I'll be when the sun goes down. I'm a standby my woman man. Our world turns around a little gold band.
As the school is teaching you Braille, why the discipline? You know, I think it's a different period, David. It's not something that would happen in school today. But this is a long time ago, and that was pretty well accepted back then. If somebody said something that was wrong, get slapped in the face, and you said, "Don't you say that to me again." Seems especially cruel even at a school for the blind, though. Yeah, and eventually even, you know, taking up for one of my friends, you know, at a house, father slapped him in the face and broke his glasses, and I said, "You shouldn't have done that. That's, you know, that's just wrong." So to make a point even worse, he slapped me in the face. And I had just a little bit of light vision in my left eye, but I woke up the next morning to a sea of red in that left eye. But it was funny. They took my tonsils out when I was 6 in this infirmary, and when I was 15, they took my left out in the same place.
And I'll gladly spend forever standing by the woman who stands by her man. Well, you can walk out on me tonight.
The article skips down and ends with this. Ronnie Millsap, it's been an absolute pleasure and honor talking to you today. Thanks for coming in. Thank you for having me on, David. Ronnie Millsap's new album is called Then Sings My Soul, and you can hear additional tunes at nprmusic.org. In the background, you can hear Millsap singing, "Oh, hear my plea, won't you help my eyes to see?" This next article is an iTunes review of a new album by Fleet Foxes, entitled Helplessness Blues, released on the 3rd of May, 2011. With today's abundance of political talking heads and overly boisterous celebrities, there can be distinct power in lowering the volume. Fleet Foxes' eagerly anticipated new album, Helplessness Blues, thrives in chilled-out dynamics and restrained performances.
Just as the sand made everything round, just as the tar seeps up from the ground.
More than 2 years in the making, the Pacific Northwest Quintet's sophomore full-length is like a Best Ensemble Cast award winner, with the constants being the songwriting of singer, multi-instrumentalist Robin Pecknold and the band's enveloping vocal harmonies. Whether it's the steady piano of Battery Kinsey, the harpsichord on the Plains' Bitter Dancer, which is playing in the background now, or the exquisite interwoven acoustic guitars that introduced the Cascades, Fleet Foxes continue to deftly blend folk and rock's quieter traditions with an acoustic, electric, chamber pop aesthetic. So how'd you do on today's trivia questions? Question number one, who's the only person to be inducted two times into the Country Music Hall of Fame? It was, in fact, Roy Rogers, answer B. And which of the following singers started out as a professional baseball pitcher? It was, in fact, Charlie Pride. Kiss an Angel Good Morning, CMA's Entertainer of the Year, 1971.
I've had a change of dreams, I'm coming home. But tears filled my eyes when I found out she was gone. Smoky Mountain Rain keeps on falling.
Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Rock Review. Be sure to listen at the same time next week. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for a print and visually impaired audience. This program is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast. If you have a suggestion for an artist, group, or genre of rock music to feature on Rock Review, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 832-5138. Today's featured artist was Ronnie Millsap, recommended to us by Bill McClure. Thank you, Bill. And so long, until next time.